we got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So today is Veterans Day, and in my eyes, there is no better day to honor the sacrifice of so many by taking the quintessentially American action of speaking truth to power. There really is no other better day to take the opportunity to do that. And as I said, quintessentially American, and expose the lies that so many veterans were sold by the state. Today, we should remember those who risked their lives for what they believed to be right, and honor them by bringing to light the many different ways in which we have all been deceived by those who have gambled with the lives of generations of Americans for unjust reasons and immoral ambitions. Far too many have been conditioned from birth to blindly serve and to see anything else as an affront to what this country represents. Yet this nation has not represented what it claims to for quite some time, which is why I do what I do, to awaken those lost in the lies to the reality that their loyalties have been hijacked by those who care nothing for the love we have of this country's core values. Whether or not they were ever truly practiced by this nation's founders, they have become real for us. This slowly materializing mountain of lies is also why there is such forceful efforts to make holidays like today about glorifying the state and its war efforts, as opposed to those they tricked into carrying them out. Despite that being the claim, and to make those of us saying anything less out to be deceivers and manipulators, truly accusing us of that which they are guilty. The thing I say on this show all the time. That's classic propaganda, in the truest sense of the word. The saddest part is that so many have bought into this, and so much so that they do not even know their own history, and turn around and call those of us still embracing the true values of this country as the enemy, treasonous even. So today, all I ask of those of you out there that are currently recoiling in disgust for my willingness to speak ill of this country on such a day is first, understand that I'm not speaking ill of this country. That's the deception. I love this country, the real country, its people. I'm speaking ill of those who have deceived the masses and use our love of the nation, our nation, to carry out imperialist wars of aggression in our name. Second, to take a step back and simply look at what such blind subservience to those in power, who arrogantly lie to maintain it, has done, both in this country and to those around the world who dared to think for themselves. So many of the stories today relating to this overarching topic, but I had a couple of stories I want to begin with today that I saw just before I got started, one of which is breaking news happening in Gaza, as well as a really quick follow-up story that I wanted to cover before we got into everything else that relates directly to a previous show that we just did about the idea of sanctions and the false idea of allowing medicines and important things to get through when, in fact, they actually don't do that at all. This tweet coming from Mike Preisner, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He says, the U.S. is intentionally blocking shipments of insulin to Venezuela, which Maduro government purchased. Meanwhile, in the U.S., you got to use GoFundMe to get insulin to get your foot or get your foot cut off. Now, this guy is a writer, I believe, producer for Empire Files. Would that be Martin? I greatly respect their work. I've seen a few other people cover this point. I haven't actually been able to independently verify it. But the point being that this is exactly what we're talking about. They put these blockades and these sanctions on these groups, and then they claim, oh, but we're going to make sure the civilians don't suffer, and we'll let their medicine get through, and then they circumvent that and make sure the medicine doesn't get through, because the point is to hurt the civilian population. As I've said time and time again, and as the U.S.'s own documentation reveals, that is what they do them for, point blank. So I felt this was important to cover, to point out that this is happening yet again, and yet another country being, you know, on the other side of the aggression of the United States imperial actions. Now, for the breaking story from today that I want to get into before we get into the bulk of everything else, that is, as always, big news, is coming from MiddleEastMonitor.com. I first saw it actually on Jake Morfonios' channel. He was reporting live, I think may still be now, entitled Israeli Jets Strike Positions in Gaza as Tensions Mount. Now, this has been ongoing, but this kind of stuff that you simply do not see in the mainstream media unless to give you a quick one-off about how Israel's defending itself. And then none of that will ever be on the front page or on the breaking front, you know, page of the TV stations. It's always buried just to give them, you know, well, we did cover it and we just didn't give us, you know, all the information is what it comes down to. Now, Israeli fighter jets on today, well, technically, I believe it was late last night, early morning, struck positions across the blockaded Gaza Strip, which was in response to a launch of a bunch of rockets from Gaza into southern Israel. This according to the Israeli military. Now, even taken at face value, the idea that the Palestinians, and even then, assuming it's the Palestinians over Hamas, over, you know, they all get lumped into one group. But the point being is, even if it was just a bunch of average Palestinians, or with Hamas's help, that are shooting rockets into Israel, is that, you know, you have to ask yourself the honest question. We're talking about a group of people who have been displaced, who are currently being starved to death, just every terrible thing you could think, but the lack of electricity, the lack of drinking water. They're living in an open prison, and Israel's occupying their legal land. So they're simply fighting for their rights. You could argue they're doing, but you have to see it from a logical, objective standpoint and realize that they're not, it's like locking someone in a cage and then when they throw things at you from the cage, you point and go, oh, see, that's why they're in the cage. No, they're in the cage and they're trying to fight to get out. That's what we're looking at here. Now, along with the airstrikes, Israeli artillery units shelled positions across the coast, which is always the way this goes. They point and say, oh, well, Hamas is doing things, so they just kind of bomb everywhere. Civilians, everyone included, just Gaza. As the blanket idea that everyone in Gaza is a terrorist, as they've repeatedly said, which is fundamentally false. Now, according to Gaza's health ministry, at least three Palestinians have been killed by the strikes, while the Israel Broadcasting Authority has reported that seven Israelis were injured by rocket fire from Gaza. As I see so far, no actual casualties, which is usually the way these things go. That we see somebody stub their toe on Israel's side, so they murder 30 Palestinians. It's this very unequal back and forth. Now, artillery units near the Gaza-Israel buffer zone have reportedly targeted concentrations of Palestinian activists in central Gaza, along with resistance positions in the town of Jabalia and the city of Deir al-Balah. Israeli helicopter gunships have reportedly targeted several positions in southern Gaza. Again, they claim these are Hamas strongholds, but routinely we show after the fact of just mass amounts of civilian casualties. Just bombing Gaza. And this is their way of saying, look, we're going to hurt you if you continue to support Hamas. And that's what they're doing. They're intentionally targeting civilians, which we've shown many times over. Now, in a joint statement, Palestinian resistance factions announced that they had been firing rockets into southern Israel in response to an Israeli military incursion into southern Gaza Strip late last night. So the story changes here. We find out, oh, look, at least as the Palestinians are claiming, take it for what you will. You know, you shouldn't believe either side at face value. But based on what we know of their history, this seems to make sense. We've known that Gaza has had tanks lined up, ready to go, looking, and they've been openly talking about fully infiltrating and taking over Gaza. So now we find out from Palestinians that it looks like Israel tried to invade Gaza by cover of night, and Palestinians responded by launching rockets, and Israel turns around and says, look, Palestinians are launching rockets, we're going to go and invade, trying to make that seem like the starting point. You make up your own mind. It seems pretty clear based on Israel's previous actions what you think. You probably assumed that I would believe. Now, in a separate statement, the army said it had targeted more than 20 positions inside Gaza. They claim that they're all affiliated with resistance movements like Hamas and Islamic Jihad. But again, as we've shown routinely, that's very usually not the case. Now, as I pointed out, Jake Morfonios was covering this live. You may still be. He always does great coverage, and he's one of the first places that I saw this. And as he pointed out, there was a Twitter account that made an open threat against civilians of Gaza. It was an Israeli-based account that was then quickly deleted, which I found very revealing that this is the kind of idea. Here's the tweet itself with the deleted. You can see the tweet is unavailable. But here's actual closer picture of the tweet they deleted, and let me show you why this is important, which again, which is what Jake Morfonios pointed out in his live feed. It says the COGAT account, I forget what the acronym stands for, but it's an Israel-based government account. It says, and it's continuing, and the state of Israel will continue to respond with an iron fist against all terrorist activity or rocket fire coming from the Hamas terrorist organization, as if everything coming from anywhere in Palestine, Gaza, is always a Hamas terrorist. That's they lump everything together. And it says, residents of Gaza, look carefully at the pictures from Operation Protective Eagle in 2014. A picture is worth 1,000 words. That is a very thinly veiled threat saying, look at what we did to you before, which murdered scores of Palestinians. Now think twice about doing anything because we're just going to do it again. That's an open threat. And you can see from the previous picture, you can see below that image I'm showing there, it says 2018/2014 on the bottom of it. And so they're basically showing you now and today and saying, get ready, we're going to do the same thing. That's pretty horrifying to realize that and that's why they immediately deleted it. Gave you a glimpse of the real intentions behind the fake state of Zionist Israel. Not just all Jews or not just all Israeli people, but the horrible group that is currently running it. Very similar to the U.S. oligarchy that's currently hijacked this country from the American people. Very horrifying to see this stuff. And maybe the reason why this is not going to be talked about today and other stories that are going on are probably, one of which I'll touch on today, is probably being used to distract you from things exactly like this. Now let's get back into the main topics of today, which obviously the plight of the Palestinian people and the ongoing just human rights violations and war crimes by the Israeli fake state of Israel. It's always very important, and I recommend you share this story and get this out there because you don't ever hear this. You don't hear both sides. You don't understand with the real context behind it. But that being said, based on the fact that it's Veterans Day and this was the idea of the show to begin with, the next story coming from a site that I was unfamiliar with, greedmedia.com, but pointed something out very, very interesting in regard to the main topic of the day, entitled U.S. Arms Exports Up 13%. You don't say. You don't say we're selling more weapons than ever before. Interesting how the state trying to spread democracy, liberty, and peace around the world is selling more weapons to more high-risk and dangerous people than any other country in the world. Wonder how that works out. Only good people, I assume, but in fact, that's verifiably false. Good article I recommend you read for yourself, not very long. Now, the State Department said on Thursday that U.S. arms sales to foreign governments rose 13% to $192 billion in the year ending September 30th, a result of looser restrictions, mind you, on sales coupled with high-level efforts to close deals. Basically saying, we're just going to kind of loosen any regulations and restrictions we have on who and how we can sell, and it's just a free game. Just sell to everybody everywhere. I mean, I'm being facetious, but that's honestly what it's saying. Looser restrictions on the sale of highly dangerous weapons coupled with high-level efforts to close deals. And it gets worse, but according to U.S. officials, U.S. President Donald Trump wants to make the U.S. already the dominant in the global weapons trade, which many don't even know. I pointed this out time and time again. The leading arms dealer in the world is the United States. But Trump, already the leading arms dealer, wants to make an even bigger arms trader, a merchant, to the world than it already is. Despite concerns, of course, among human rights and arms control advocates. Of course, because today, nobody cares about human rights anymore unless you're on the other side of the U.S. empire. Then it matters. The largest U.S. arms contractor who sell ships, tanks, airplanes, missiles, and other goods to foreign militaries include none other than Boeing Company, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, and Northrop Grumman Corp. Now, these are all groups you've heard of. General Dynamics and Raytheon, of course, and Lockheed Martin for being involved in the bombs that are currently murdering a bunch of Yemeni children. And these are the groups that are profiting wildly from these acts as the U.S. government completely facilitates the loose sales of their weapons to just basically anybody. The increase came in part because the Trump administration rolled out a new Buy American plan in April that relaxed restrictions on sales while encouraging U.S. officials to take a bigger role in increasing businesses overseas for the U.S. weapons industry. There are two major ways that foreign governments purchase arms from U.S. companies: direct commercial sales, negotiated between a government and a company, and foreign military sales, in which a foreign government works with the Pentagon on a potential deal. Both require approval by the U.S. government. Now, of course, as you've heard me say a couple times already, I'll just sell it to anybody. And you're going, well, Ryan, this seems like a bit of a stretch with what you're reading there. Well, let me go a little bit further and help you understand that the U.S., independent of the information you just read, verifiably by the UN, sells to some of the most high-risk people in the world. And of course, when hearing the U.S., as they always do, so disingenuously pretend to care about dangerous people being in control of powerful weapons, such as Iran, oh my God, we can't let them get any kind of missiles today. It's important to remember that not only is the U.S. the world's leading arms dealer, but that they knowingly sell weapons to the most dangerous countries in the world. That's a fact. Countries that are considered high risk for use in terrorism, war crimes, generally just for acts that they pretend to be fighting against around the world. This according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Their quote, the U.S. delivered major weapons to a significantly higher number of export destinations than any other supplier, which you already know. A recent study by the Cato Institute provides compelling evidence that the U.S. is actually quite careless about whom it sells to. Authors A. Trevor Thrall and Caroline Dormany produced an index of overall riskiness of arms trade deals since 2002 that shows the United States does not discriminate between high and low risk customers. They say, quote, the average sales to the riskiest nations are higher than those to the least risky nations. So basically, the United States sells more weapons to the worst people in the world. They say, go on to say, quote, the 22 countries coded as highest risk on the Global Terrorism Index bought an average of $1.91 billion worth of American weapons from the United States. The 28 countries in active high-level conflicts bought an average of $2.94 billion worth of arms. So not only is the U.S. selling the most amount of weapons to the world, they're selling predominantly to the most dangerous people out there. Like, really rectify that with all the BS that we get fed by the people in control of this country today. That they'll turn around and then sell these arms to people like Iraq, who they were friends with, and then flip a switch and invade them and overthrow and murder their leader at the time. This is what they do. This false veneer of humanitarianism and doing things for the people of Iran is false. It's so easy to see if you just brush past the surface. Simply knowing this, how can we stand on this moral high ground while we're currently arming some of the most dangerous people in the world? Ask yourself that question, especially on Veterans Day, as we continue to send our soldiers overseas to fight the very people that are armed with U.S. weapons. Now, in a related story, this one coming actually from Consortium News, related in regard to military and veterans and overseas, I actually like the Free Thought Project title more. They republish it with a different title, and I like this title more. But the original article is coming from Consortium News, from the Free Thought Project, as the U.S. spends $1.5 million a day to, quote, fight, which we know there's a reason for those quotes, Afghan heroin production, heroin output quadrupled. How fantastic. So either they're really, really bad at their job, or this is what they plan to do. As we've said so many times, they're either incompetent or complicit. There's not really many ways to look at it. Either way, they should stop what they're doing, don't you think? But they're not going to. Now, efforts to combat drugs in Afghanistan have cost U.S. taxpayers more than $8 billion since 2002. Your money. Except the fact that Afghanistan's opium crisis is worse than ever. That's $1.5 million every single day. So we got 10.5 a day going to Israel for whatever they want to use it for to kill people. We've got 1.5 million a day just kind of going to Afghanistan as their opium crisis continues to skyrocket. It's pretty ridiculous. And we've talked about this many times before. The idea of the real nature of the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan, whether we're talking about minerals, whether we're talking about opium, I mean, any number of things, it has nothing to do with helping people, as we can see clearly that the country's in more chaos than it was well before they ever got there. It's staggering to see this repeat of action. Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, on and on and on with these groups. They leave nothing but chaos in their wake under the guise that they're trying to help people. And then we have to also tie this in with the opium crisis in this country, the opioid crisis in this country, which is directly correlates with the rise of opium in Afghanistan. Weird. Even though, interestingly, I find out now that the U.S. gets most of its opium today from South America, which may play into some of the other topics we get into with Venezuela and all of the focus on South America. Maybe there's a reason for that. Nonetheless, there's profit being made from U.S. interests in the sale of opium to Europe from Afghanistan. Bottom line. As I said, either they're shockingly incompetent or this was the plan. Either way, they should not be allowed to do these things anymore. We're going to go invade this country to save those people. We should be like, no, you can't do that because you're really bad at it. Seems like a pretty basic thing to think. But either way, you know my opinion. I think this was the plan. I think this is what they're trying to do. They just don't want to say that. And if you needed any more evidence that they never cared about stopping the drug trade, here it is. Now, Washington is well aware of the shattered effects of Afghan drug production. But the SIGAR, I believe it's pronounced, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, writes that, quote, counter-narcotics seems to have fallen completely off the U.S. agenda. The State Department's new integrated county strategy for Afghanistan no longer even includes counter-narcotics as a priority, but instead subsumes the issue into general operations. Meanwhile, the U.S. military says it has no counter-narcotics mission in Afghanistan, and U.S. aid says it will not plan, design, or implement new programs to address opium poppy cultivation. So 17 years of $8 billion of your money to stop opium from growing, and they've gotten four times stronger, as these show now. And now instead of increasing those efforts, they say, well, we're just going to kind of just regress back to daily operations and we're not going to plan anything new, but we're still trying to stop that opium. It's laughable. And it's something that we need to be able to see through very easily. The drug catastrophe is plain for all to see. And after 17 years of war and expenditure, the $8 billion of your money, the illegal narcotics industry is absolutely thriving. Because that was the plan. Now, can this be indicative of the general level of incompetence of the U.S. Department of State and the Pentagon? Or, you know, was this really what they were trying to accomplish? I want you to ask yourself that question. I'm sure you know my opinion, but it's an important question to really ask yourself to get to the crux of the kind of thing we're dealing with, to acknowledge the real intentions of these people that pretend to be altruistic. And of course, in this same line, think of how many veterans died in Afghanistan. And for what? The recent shooter in California, the Thousand Oaks shooter, was a vet from the most gruesome period during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. We can't ignore the constant relation to these shooters and these aggressive acts to the PTSD and the issues that we have from mutilating people's psyches by sending them to battle other people for absolutely no reason. Now, all the reasons the U.S. sold to the people about the justifications for the invasion, we now know we're basically all lies. We've talked about roundly on this show, from the false invasion after 9/11 against the Taliban that was created by the United States, and the lies about created Article 8 of, or that used Article 8 of NATO to basically start the war on terror that we've seen ever since. All this stuff was based on fabrications from the very beginning, and then all the stated goals following that have only gotten worse. A stronger than ever Taliban. A massively larger opium trade? I mean, come on. The U.S. created the Taliban, as I said. The U.S., as I see it, created the opioid crisis. So it seems like their plan is working. I'll let you think on that for yourself. Now, in news more domestically that I think was important to cover, that I think likely is meant to pull you away from all this other stuff, but I wanted to touch on it for a few different reasons, because this is clearly the hot topic, but I'm very skeptical of why this is being out there. Entitled, Provisional Ballot Boxes Discovered Inside Avis Rental Car at Fort Lauderdale Airport. Just sitting around, apparently. Everything about this story screams setup to me. This is designed, in my eyes, to keep us looking at this story maybe while Israel's bombing Gaza, Maybe while all the other things continue to intensify, maybe while we realize that the primaries, that the midterms did absolutely nothing to change anything, as they always never do, if you can even say it like that. Maybe, maybe. But the point is, this story is wildly suspect. And again, just points out the frivolousness of the just ballots just flying around, coming in back trucks of cars, and you know, all this weirdness going on. It is corrupt from top to bottom. And if you don't see that by now, I'm sorry, because there's far too much going around to make that obvious. Now, provisional ballot boxes from the Broward County Supervisor of Elections office were reportedly discovered in the back of an Avis rental car location at Fort Lauderdale Airport on Sunday. Attorney and Broward GOP State Committeeman Richard DeNapoli, I'm not sure if how you pronounce his name, says he received a call from an Avis employee informing him of the found ballot boxes after sheriff's deputies were initially unwilling to investigate. So he called the sheriff and said, hey, I've got a bunch of random ballots, and they just kind of didn't care until they contacted him. And he realized, yeah, that's a big deal, especially with all the stuff going on right now in Florida. And apparently approximately 20 minutes after receiving the tip, a heavy police presence arrived, blocked off the traffic to the airport, and a bomb threat was announced. How does that work out? There's a lot of weirdness around this story. The media was in Terminal 4 reporting on a non-existent bomb threat that was apparently tweeted directly from the official Twitter account of the Broward Sheriff's Office. Yet, it turns out there was never a bomb. So we've got a box full of ballots just showing up at an Avis location, which is wildly suspect, and then a bomb threat after the police at first didn't care about it. And then it got out, there was a bomb threat, the media covers the bomb threat, ignores the ballots, and that's where we're at. So, it's very, very ridiculous. I mean, this whole thing, look at it two ways. Either this whole thing is designed to catch your attention, and maybe it's not working, or maybe this was a bomb threat designed to draw your attention away from the fact that these ballots were just haphazardly left sitting out. Either way, I don't think you should care about any of this stuff. I wanted to report it to show you at the end of the day that this is the system. This is how this stuff operates. They lie to you, they cheat, they manipulate. This is not a one-off. This is our political system. And I need people to recognize that so we can begin thinking for 2 years from now on why we're not going to participate. That's how I see it. I just want people to see my side, my perspective in all of this. But I guess we got a fake bomb threat, ballots showing up out of nowhere, another day in U.S. politics. Moving on to the next story, coming from Consortium News as well. Now, this one I thought was very important that got zero attention, largely with everything else going on, but I wasn't even unaware of until I read this article. It was very important, entitled, Brennan and Clapper Should Not Escape Prosecution. Now, I read the title and I'm like, absolutely, completely agree. But when you get into the context, the content of this, it's actually quite shocking, more so to realize that nothing is being done about an obvious crime, just like we saw with Clinton. Mountains of blatant crimes that get just ignored because she's in a special class. Now, recently declassified documents apparently show point blank that former CIA director and former director of national intelligence approved illegal spying on Congress and then just classified their crime, which is why we're only hearing about it now. Pretty crazy. Now, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa made a dramatic announcement this month that basically nobody paid attention to. Grassley released a statement saying that 4 years ago, he asked the Intelligence Community Inspector General to release two congressional notifications written by former CIA Director John Brennan and former Director of Intelligence, National Intelligence, James Clapper. Grassley had had his request to declassify the documents basically ignored repeatedly throughout the last 2 years of the Obama administration. He decided to try again because all the Obama people at the CIA and DNI are gone now. This time, his request was approved. The information that was finally declassified was written confirmation that John Brennan ordered CIA hackers to intercept the emails of all potential or possible intelligence community whistleblowers who may have been trying to contact the congressional oversight committees, specifically to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now understand, by definition, the term whistleblower, not just leaking information, but a whistleblower is someone who is releasing evidence of a crime to the proper authorities because they know it's the right thing to do. That's what a whistleblower is. So they're literally saying that they were stopping people from releasing evidence of crimes to the very groups that should be investigating it, likely because it incriminated people that they work with or themselves directly. This is shocking information. Of course, you're never going to hear this on the mainstream media because their job is not to cover the news. Their job is to distract you. Now, so this simply put, Brennan ordered his people to hack into the Senate email system. Apparently, this is the second time he's done this. Ordered them to hack Congress. This is a fucking gigantic story. They got absolutely no coverage. Now, also, they point out in the article, which I found very interesting, in addition to this obvious crime that he'll likely never be held accountable for, as well as Clapper, it's also a crime, interestingly, that nobody knows, to overclassify document information, or excuse me, government information, which I found very interesting. Apparently, no one's ever been charged with this crime. That's why it kind of is ignored. And that's why it's a big issue today, because government regularly overclassifies things that they just simply don't want us to see. And then, oh, national security, we can't do it. And so there's another crime involved there, because it turns out now we can see that it was never should have been classified. The CIA Inspector General said of the notifications, "I could see no reason to withhold declassification of these documents. They contained no information that could be construed as sources and methods." That's an admission that the notifications were improperly classified in the first place. It's illegal to classify a crime as well. And it's illegal to classify something solely for the purpose of preventing embarrassment to the CIA. Yet those were the exact reasons for classifying the documents in the first place. It was because Brennan and Clapper think they're somehow above the law. Special cases here. And again, remember that it was Clapper who lied directly to the Senate Intelligence Committee about intercepting communications of American citizens. And he also did that with impunity.
So what I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently, perhaps, collect, but not wittingly.
And remember, the only reason that he didn't get in trouble for that, because people were calling for him because it's an obvious, we look back now and it's obvious that he lied. He knowingly lied there under oath, which is a crime. And by the way, so you know, even in regard to other situations since then, it's also a crime to lie to Congress whether or not you're under oath. But as I understand it, he was under oath. But in cases like Zuckerberg testifying in front of Congress and he lied, it's not perjury, but it is in fact still a crime. But that being said, Clapper, did in fact lie there, and they knew about it, and they simply just dragged their feet until the statute of limitations ran out, and nothing ever happened. Now we're seeing a crime here that needs to be taken to the top, and I'm willing to bet you that nothing will happen. They knowingly allowed people to hack Congress, hack the Senate's emails, to see if there's any whistleblowers to protect themselves, then classified the whole thing before they informed everybody, so it could not be released. And now we're seeing that it is being released and we can see all the evidence. We have everything we need. Let's see if they end up in jail. They should. For the next story, and the last story of the day in regard to Yemen and more ideas of just what's going on overseas, the U.S. war machine, you know, for this Veterans Day that we have today, what's really being carried out in our name, in our dollars, with our American people, as there are American people on the ground in Yemen. Many people don't even know Yemen's happening and there's Americans fighting there on the ground. This also from Consortium News, entitled, "Yemeni war deaths have been underestimated by 5-1. Total deaths in Yemen top more than 100,000. That may be news to some of you, as we keep hearing this obnoxious 10,000 death number, which has already been debunked and shown it was likely more about 56,000. But now that's even more than that, as the very groups that push these numbers out have realized that they have been mistaken or misled. The number 10,000 came from the very first year. And because they never got any updated information, they continued to pump out that number as if it was real. And they knew better. And they did it to manipulate, as they always do. So an NGO responsible for reporting on the war deaths in Yemen has acknowledged that it has underestimated the casualties in the three-year-old conflict by at least 5-1. Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project had originally estimated that about 10,000 people have been killed in the war in Yemen, roughly the same number reported by the World Health Organization, WHO, surveys are, that's a weird way to say that. The World Health Organization surveys are regularly cited as estimates of war deaths in Yemen by UN agencies and the world's media. And as I pointed out, the reason that was wrong is because they simply got no further data after that first year. And they've admitted this. But ACLED, the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, now estimates the true number of people killed in Yemen is probably between 70 and 80,000. ACLED's estimates do not, in fact, include the thousands of Yemenis who have died from the war's indirect consequences. And I would say direct intentional consequences, personally, such as starvation and preventable diseases like diphtheria and cholera. Easily preventable, mind you, with clean water and basic treatment. And there's the reason that those are exploding, because they have neither. And that's intentional. UNICEF reported in December 2016 that a child was dying every 10 minutes in Yemen. And the humanitarian crisis has only worsened since then. I've seen something like one every 3 minutes at this point. At that rate, the total of all deaths caused directly and indirectly by the war must now be more than 100,000. And it's probably far beyond that, far beyond our worst nightmares. And because it's actively being kept from our intention, our ability to look into this and call it out. And there's a reason for that. They do not want the average person understanding the depth to which this is going. That they are literally starving to death an entire country for geopolitical reasons. Has nothing to do with what's right, what's moral, liberty and democracy and oppressed people. It has nothing to do with all of the classic one-liner American claims. This is about control, power, as it always is. Now, another NGO, the Yemen Data Project, revealed in September 2016 that at least a third of Saudi-led airstrikes, and my opinion on my coverage, it's way more than that, but even just a third of all their airstrikes, which has been a lot, many of which involved the U.S. built and, we're talking about Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, all these different groups. But we have to understand that the weapons that they're using are almost entirely coming from the United States. But we also have other groups, the UK, kicking in weapons. But then they also have the issue of the refueling, which we recently talked about, which they, oh, well, the U.S. has stopped refueling their planes because we're trying to get out of the war. But then we find out secretly, not even that secretly, that they've already trained the Saudis how to refuel their planes. And the Saudis said, okay, we got it. You don't need to help us anymore. So then the U.S. goes, opportunity. We're going to jump in front of the press and say, hey, we're going to stop refueling their trucks because we don't think this is right, or their planes. When that's not what happened at all. They're not going to help them refuel the planes anymore because they taught them how to do it. And they said already they don't need the help. This is how the political thing swirls this around in front of you, manipulates your perception. The same things are happening with the U.S. involvement, pointing on a map, giving them weapons, helping them bomb civilians. And they're hitting hospitals, schools, markets, mosques, and just civilian infrastructure. That is what they're doing there. This is the true nature of the U.S. war machine. This is what we're celebrating with days like today. As much as it should be the day to celebrate somebody's sacrifice, it's not ever what it's about. It's about glorifying the U.S. war machine and the fact that they apparently misled so many average people out there, which doesn't diminish their sacrifice, assuming they believed the lies that they were sold. Now, especially on a day like today, we owe it to ourselves and to those who gave their lives for the cause that they likely realized in the process of pursuing was not what they were told it was, to speak the truth and not blindly acquiesce to the jingoistic pressure of the brainwashed masses, or maybe even today, the brainwashed minority. It's not hard to do just a little research and see how many veterans tell quite a different story about what we should be proud of and what we're really doing overseas. It's also not difficult to see just how hard the establishment works to keep the message of veterans suppressed and keep them drugged up and in the shadows as they kill themselves in record numbers in silent suppression. As James Madison, our fourth president and an author of our Constitution, wrote, quote, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is, perhaps, the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies, From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive is extended, as in the president. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied, and all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. Now, damn if I've never heard a more specific and exact coverage of what we're dealing with today. Now, this should not be an outright advocation for James Madison, as all these people in our past have their things to be pointed out, but the words are real nonetheless. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. We've had all the warnings over the years about what we're dealing with, about how to stop it, about what to look for, and we just bury our heads and move forward and listen to the propaganda. Too many people do. So as we are forcibly told today, to embrace the idea of blind patriotism and subservience to the empire, lest we be seen as un-American, we should absolutely remember those who gave their lives for it, regardless of how manipulated and misled they might have been, as their actions were incredibly brave, nonetheless. They believed the mirage they were sold, like so many others. Yet we owe it to them and everyone else to be honest about what it all represents and what it's all truly for. To mindlessly say it's for freedom or spreading democracy is to simply ignore not only what those obvious lies have produced around the world, but also to allow it to carry on in your name, which to some degree makes those willing to ignore it for their daily comforts complicit, culpable even. So honor your loved ones today. Honor their courage and their beliefs. But do not blind yourself to how the faceless oligarchy uses their courage to do anything but fight for freedom and liberty. To call this atrocity out for what it is truly American. It is what this country was founded upon, and I can think of no better way to honor those lost to such fruitless wars of aggression than to stand in defiance of tyranny. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.